April 10th. His new book, Can We Price Carbon?, offers hope for a practical solution to climate change, outlining policies that have slashed carbon emissions without damaging the economy. Details at carthage.edu/Barry-Rabe, Rabe spelled R-A-B-E, presented by the Sam and Jean Johnson Distinguished Visitors Program.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Parkside welcomes David Alakogi, a photographer, for his exhibition Them Boys, featuring the subject of human bodies and clothes and their subjective meanings and mythologies. Exhibit featured from April 5th to May 11th. Visit uwp.edu for more.
Supporting WGTD is the Metropolitan Opera, whose next high-definition simulcast to movie theaters is this Saturday. Mozart's delightful comedy Così fan tutte in a dazzling new production set at Coney Island with a cast that includes Broadway star Kelly O'Hara. Information at metopera.org. Support for WGTD comes from the Carthage College Department of Music, presenting Beethoven, 5 Piano Concertos, 1 Pianist, featuring the New Philharmonic Orchestra, under the baton of Illinois Professional Orchestra Association Conductor of the Year, Kirk Muspratt, along with Carthage's own Dr. Wael Farouk as soloist, Friday, April 6th at 7 p.m. in the A.F. Siebert Chapel. Tickets and more information at carthage.edu/tickets.
This is WGTD-FM. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jess Sheeler, an outreach and career transition specialist at Job Corps, Steve Brown, assistant professor of education leadership at UW Oshkosh, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Mangi. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Welcome to the 2018 WGTD Education Matters Kenosha Unified School District Board Candidates Forum. I am your host, Karen Sconsert, and welcome to our four candidates, Todd Battle, Tom Duncan, Mike Falkowski, and Mary Braun Motor. I will explain the format and timing for the forum in a moment, but first, as a matter of full disclosure, I want to say that I am a resident of Kenosha, a parent of an eighth grader at Bullen Middle School. I'm also an associate professor of education at Carthage College in Kenosha, and therefore have a lot of experience with various KUSD schools through research projects, fieldwork, student teaching placements, interviewing KUSD personnel for this radio program, and through alumni of Carthage who now teach in KUSD schools. I have met all four of the candidates before, either at other campaign events or if they have run for a school board before and participated in a past forum here on our show. The format for this program will be as follows. Each candidate will have 1 minute to introduce her or himself and tell us why you're running and your qualifications for the position of school board member. After that, I will ask a series of questions, and each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer. I'll give a 15-second nonverbal warning as your time is running out. Please adhere to the time limit as well as you can. If there's extra time in your 2 minutes, I might ask a follow-up question or ask for clarification. The order of candidates will rotate with each question, so each candidate will have a chance to answer first, second, third, and fourth. If we have time for more than 4 questions, I will start the cycle over again. At the end of our time, each candidate will have a chance to give a closing or summary statement. So we're going to start with introductions and opening statements. You will have 1 minute each, and we'll start with Todd Battle.
Thank you, Karen. My name is Todd Battle. I serve as the president of the Kenosha Area Business Alliance. That's my day job. I'm a strong believer in having a strong and high-quality public school system in Kenosha. I think it's a critical building block for this community. And so I think the board needs to have strong and effective leadership. And that's why I threw my hat in the ring to run for school board. In terms of qualifications, I spend most of my day working on economic development projects here in Kenosha County. That gives me a lot of experience working with both public and private sector leaders and figuring out how to make the community better. I look at KUSD and I see a large, complex, dynamic organization, and I think it needs strong and effective leadership. I'd say my experience serving on the board of Fredert South, in the past on the Gateway Technical College Board of Trustees, and serving on the Audit Budget Finance Committee for KUSD gives me adequate experience as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And next we have Tom Duncan.
Hi, I'm Tom Duncan, and I'm a candidate for the KUSD School Board. My day job is as Vice President and Chief Operating Officer at Frederick South. I have 44 years of progressive leadership experience. I have teaching experience, having taught organizational management at Carthage College. I have a master's degree in business administration. During my many years of work, I've also been very civic-minded and was recognized for all that service with the Community Service Award by the Kenosha Area Business Alliance and the Kenosha Area Chamber of Commerce. I would be the best listener for our board of directors and an investor by innovating for success, no one left behind, bridging the achievement gap, vocational growth for more apprenticeship programs, environments for learning, preparing students for bright futures, safety in our schools for everyone, time to listen and change where necessary, transparency and community engagement, oversight of financial resources, redesign to meet cultural changes. By voting for Duncan, you will put the D in KUSD. Thank you.
Thank you. And next we have Mike Falkowski.
Good morning, Karen. I'm running for re-election on the Kenosha Unified School Board. I have served for the last 3 years. I have been the board treasurer for two of those 3 years. I've also served on the Policy and Personnel Committee. I'm also currently serving on the Audit Budget Finance Committee and the Facilities and Planning Committee. I think I have the most experience. I also am a parent. So I have 3 students in the district, so I have a lot of skin in the game. One of the big things I push for is more community involvement, and I think all our decisions should always involve putting all students first, and that's one of the priorities I make. And if elected again, I will continue to work hard and make sure we have more involvement with public involvement and that we put our students first.
Okay, thank you. And finally, Mary Motter.
Well, why am I, Mary Motter, running for school board? Well, there's actually 3 reasons. My background in education, my community connection, and my passion for improving our schools and concern for the students. I have 30 years of educational experience and degrees in public policy, political science, and special education. In addition to having visited every school in Kenosha, there's over 50, I have taught at all levels from kindergarten to college. I didn't just start attending school board meetings when I decided to run for office. I've been attending for years, listening as well as speaking at meetings. I'm very active in my community. I attend the Kenosha Labor Roundtable Breakfast, which has been attended by school board members for many years. I think I have the educational background and the experience, which makes me a very important school board member.
Okay, thank you very much. Now we'll move on to the questioning part of this. And as I said before, everyone gets 2 minutes to answer the question, and then it'll be the next person's turn. You are free to address someone else's answer in your 2 minutes of time, so that's up to you. Okay, so first question, first respondent will be Todd Battle. This past week was forward testing in my son's middle school, and testing will be coming up after spring break in most of the high schools and other schools in the district. So what do you think should be the role of standardized testing in the schools? How often should tests be given? In what subjects? How many hours should be taken up with standardized testing in any given year in a child's schooling experience?
Yeah, great question, Karen. And I think this issue comes up a lot in terms of the amount of testing. The way I view it is testing becomes a benchmark and a tool to assess where students are at. The better the assessment in terms of providing real-time feedback and current data, I think the better and more effective a tool it is. You worry some about the amount and the volume of testing, particularly as it starts to impact how teachers teach and prepare lessons plans. And you always worry about a little bit of teaching towards the test so that students prepare, you know, perform better on tests, but maybe it's not as effective in terms of a teaching tool. All of that said, I think the standardized testing that is done does provide great foundational data so we know where our schools are at and we know where our kids are at. So as much as it can be an inconvenience and it can take away from other teaching and learning time, I think it's necessary data that we have to have. I think both, you know, the KUSD and the entire school system needs to make decisions based on data, and without having these standardized tests and without having these data points and this data input, it's pretty hard to make informed decisions. So, in terms of, I think the amount of testing right now is probably about right, because it gives the school system data points that they need. Some of it's required, but also a lot of it is giving schools immediate feedback during the school year to see how students and schools are progressing.
Okay, thank you. Next will be Tom Duncan.
Thanks, Karen. Well, having taught, I've fully come to understand the need to provide some clear and consistent learning goals to help students prepare for life. And I understand that there are necessary mastery and signposts along the way, and that range of support required to ensure that all students are, in fact, learning, and especially those with special needs and second language learners, so that they can reach a state of readiness. And let's face it, Common Core funds our district, and therefore this type of testing is a necessity. The good thing I think that's come about is that there's been collaboration on textbooks and digital media and comprehensive assessment, but there should not be that type of formal testing that doesn't take into account that student that doesn't learn or test as well. I would tell you personally that I wasn't a great test taker. But in fact, I achieved and I worked hard, and I think we have to acknowledge that that is but just one standardized tool. There are other tools to assist individuals in closing those achievement gaps, and I think our system has done a good job with some of the intervention programs along the way so that the students can have a progression of success. So I think matching and aligning interests, aligning resources, promoting individuality, that's where we need to be. And truthfully, until the law changes, we're probably going to have to test or teach to the test, not necessarily to understanding and day-to-day application of best practices in life.
Okay, thank you very much. And our next respondent is Mike Falkowski.
Thank you. The standardized tests, like the forward exam, are something that's necessary, but I don't know how much value overall it provides the district. It does provide tremendous value to the state because those forward exams allow them to judge how our schools are doing in comparison to each other and, with more importantly, with other districts. And as Tom said, Common Core is also important because we can measure between different states. So we can make sure that students in Florida and Wisconsin are learning the same things or close to the same things. So because we have a population that moves around a lot, so it's important that our kids can keep up in the grades that they're around. But I think what's better use of time, or what we use, or more important tools, are our assessment tools when we do our PALs or our MAPS, because then the teachers get those results right away. So they can, if we're looking at things like our achievement gap that we want to, you know, improve, that gives us more frequent benchmarks where we can see how our students are doing, and then we can catch students if they're starting to fall behind or if they arrive to the schools not at the grade level. So I'd like to see us continue with our assessment testing and the frequency of those, but I would like to see the standardized testing if there was a way to reduce the time that it takes, because it takes a lot of times. And I don't agree with testing to the test or taking, you know, teaching kids how to fill in bubbles and just follow along. That's not what our employers are looking for. They're looking for people who can think creatively, who can come up with solutions. And standardized testing just teaches you to remember information. It does not encourage teachers or provide, takes away from time for teachers to encourage that creativity, project-based learning, things where students can actually explore topics and get a better understanding. So I guess I know that was a big, long answer because there's a lot, see it from a lot of different angles, but assessing our students is important. Standardized testing is important, but I like to see it limited. And then my fears are just taking away too much time from creative learning from our students.
Okay, thank you. And the last respondent to this question is Mary Motter.
Well, Karen, actually standardized testing has been around for a long time. I remember when it was the Iowa Test of Basic Skills, and we went through a whole week of testing only to get the results in May or June. So it was more of an autopsy than really a test that we could use. Things have changed now. The standardized testing with the forward test, they're sort of spread out a little bit more. And the teachers are being pushed to teach to the test, partly because there is so much pressure for good testing. And if the test results are not positive, it becomes punitive. And I think that is the real problem. There is having the test, the forward test, is as good as any other. And I think it's good for students to be able to sit through the test. But the real tests that we need to be working with our students are the things, as Mike said, the PALS and the MAP test, the measure of academic progress, which is a test that the students take three times a year. They do it on the computer. They get the results immediately, and it can be used and the data sort of parsed down so that the teachers can use that to inform instruction. I feel that our assessments and our tests should be, and our curriculum should be, data-informed but student-driven. And I think that we need to be reducing our time so that we can get towards more creative lessons and spend more time teaching.
Okay, thank you. This next question will be answered first by Tom Duncan and then following that way. So the question is, how would you determine your budget priorities? With a limited amount of funds to distribute, how do you decide between curriculum, infrastructure updates, salary increases, technology updates, and so on?
Thanks, Karen. Well, in the role that I have within our hospital system, you have to constantly be looking at how you juggle those budgets, and you've got to place priorities. And one of the ways in which you do that is you reach out to your own staff and your leadership. So I would expect that we're going to reach out to our community, to our teachers, and find out where, in fact, we need to be placing our priorities. So when it comes to curriculum, what is it that we need to fund for the books and those resources? When we're talking about salaries and pay, I think most of us recognize that 60 to 70% of our budget goes towards pay and benefits. And if we're not allocating the appropriate amount there, quite frankly, we aren't going to be able to retain and attract the type of professionals that we need to making sure that our young people are coming up in the best way they possibly can. And quite frankly, one of my hopes as we would be moving forward is that we've got to find a way to make sure that the salary scale for our teachers is at the appropriate level. Having just been in Arizona and finding out that Arizona teachers' pay is at the 50th state level doesn't sound like it's going to attract the teachers that you need for that state. So one of our priorities really must be, how can we fund and retain the very best of the best? Because as we're expecting our own children to be growing up with the best of the best, that's going to become a significant priority. So I would hope that as I have an opportunity to be on the board, that we find some creative ways to fund as much as we possibly can and to make sure that we're putting back into the system those resources that are going to be required. Budgeting isn't easy, but that's why I think you bring a great group of people together, you form that think tank, you ask for the resources, and make sure that we're extending. One of the things that I've learned as I visited with teachers over the last couple of weeks, it doesn't sound like we have reached out to the teachers to find out where we can help them with their priorities. So I would hope that we would be able to significantly do that and have small group meetings or whatever for that type of conversation to begin.
Okay, thank you very much. The next respondent to this question is Mike Falkowski.
All right, thank you. As a sitting board member, the first thing I'd like to stress is some of our money has to be spent a certain way. So part of the budget is already dictated so that, you know, we don't have much leeway right there. But some of the other things we can do, like we wanted money for salaries, well, we used our size as a district as a leveraging tool to negotiate better insurance rates. So then we had a little extra money to increase that salary schedule. We also sometimes have to make hard decisions like canceling, you know, long-term care, which was another part of the puzzle we used to provide more money for the salary schedule. So what I'm saying there is sometimes you just have to look at where you can shift money and create savings. The other thing is we have to identify inefficiency. That is, there is no really margin in the district. We have cut and cut and cut, you know, since Act 10 because we've had less money. So we really have to look at what processes can be improved, where we can use technology. The district is using more technology, but it still has a way to go. There's still too much done on paper. I think we can improve things that way. And as Tom said, we really need to talk to our staff. We need to talk to the teachers and administrators and find out what they would like, what they're asking for, and then identify the things. As I've said in previous forums, the priority always has to be the students. When you're thinking of where you want to spend the money, what is going to give you your best outcome for your students, what is going to improve performance for the students, that's where the priority. So my priority has always been to put as much resources in the classroom as possible, as it's through making sure the teachers are paid, making sure the teachers have what they need in the classroom. You know, it's kind of disheartening when you think that teachers have to pay for their own supplies for their class. And we should be providing that. I know we can't, but I wish we could. So those are the three ways, or the two things I would do is just, you know, where we can be good negotiators and just really work on identifying inefficiencies and making those processes more efficient, using those savings to fund our other priorities.
Okay, thank you. The next respondent is Mary Motter.
In preparation for running, I made an appointment with Tariq Hamden, the CFO of Kenosha Unified, and we went over the budget together. I also have spent time on the budget because I was on the negotiations committee for many years, and as such, we went over the budget, which is $350 million. So it's huge budget, but unfortunately, there's not as much wiggle room as you might think. And as Mike said, the district has done cut since Act 10 and since the loss of so much money from the state. I believe that it's 70 to 80% of the budget that does go towards staff salary and benefits. So that's just a huge amount. And there are restrictions through Act 10 on how much increase can be given to the teachers. So we have to be aware of the law. It's really sad to think that teachers have to set up websites and go to Donors Choose and sort of beg for money for projects that they feel are important. It seems like all of that creative teaching should be funded, and I'd like to see that happening. One of the ways that we can get more money through for the district is by reducing the debt, and Pat Fenimore on the Planning and Facilities Committee had talked about how he was doing that and how they were able to use some of those funds released to do necessary repairs on infrastructure. Also, as Mike pointed out, we used to have something called the Benefit Task Force where everybody would sort of get together and look on as far as how we can reduce the health insurance and benefit needs. I'd like to see that committee restored.
Okay, thank you. And then finally, it is Todd Battle's turn to respond.
Yeah, thanks. Everybody's talked about a few things. I mean, the size of the budget is pretty large at 300 plus million. I think the number's more like 80 to 85% of it is in pay and benefits for KUSD employees. So the ability to be flexible there is tough. I'm in favor of putting as much money into the classroom as we possibly can. I think if you talk to teachers and you talk to schools, they need basic stuff in the classroom, and that's where the priority ought to be. To the extent there's flexibility to add to curriculum and IT purchases and do things with facilities. To me, I think we have to do some of that, but it's secondary to what goes into the classroom. I think we have to look at making sure we've got a great teacher in front of each classroom full of students, and that's where the priority ought to be. I think the district has done some really creative things already around how they've made improvements to facilities, and I'd maybe tout one example would be the energy efficiency program, where they're using specific funding and dollars to essentially go into a building and retrofit it. New lighting, new vestibules, new boilers, new ducts. They're kind of putting a fresh coat of paint on a number of facilities with some pretty creative financing. They're also doing a really good job of managing the district's debt. As debt rolls off from former bond issues, they're then layering on new debt, so it's not an extreme burden on the taxpayer. I think the other reason we have to get out ahead of this issue, just in terms of looking at the budget, is if you look at KUSD, it's overall has declining enrollment, and schools are funded with property taxes and state aid based on enrollment. So this issue is going to become more and more of a challenge. So I think it's important we get out ahead of it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Just a reminder, my name is Karen Sconzert. I'm your Education Matters host for this Kenosha Unified School Board Candidate Forum. We are here with KUSD School Board candidates Todd Battle, Tom Duncan, Mike Falkowski, and Mary Braun-Motter. The third question, and Mike Falkowski will be the first to answer this, is how much time have you spent in KUSD schools, in what context, and can you name some of the schools where you have spent time? How will these experiences inform your work on the board? And Mike, you're first.
Great questions. The schools that I've spent the most time in, and kind of order, would be Lincoln Middle School, Dimensions of Learning, Grevenau, McKinley Elementary. Basically, as a parent, been there, helping out. I've done a lot of chaperoning on field trips, helped out with parent events at schools. Trying to think what else. And primarily, that's why I spent my time in schools, is as a parent, just as going there and talking with the teachers and like after school events, talking with the teachers there after school events or during open houses and things. I mean, it's primarily just been to, you know, I have a busy schedule, so I'm worked down in Illinois. It's hard for me to get back up here during the day, but when I get a chance in the evening, I do like to chat with the teachers. And I do also speak with them at board meetings when they're there to get to hear their concerns, and through a lot of email conversations as well. So I think that's primarily where those are the primary schools that I've been in for like official fun. There's been a couple other visits here and there, but those are the ones I spent the most time in.
Okay, and the second part of that was, how will these experiences inform your work on the board?
Well, when I see how the teachers, like when we had the transformation plan, that's when I realized how bad it was, not just from the parents, but talking to the teachers and how much stress they were under from the changes with the multi-age classes. So getting that perspective from teachers is always going to help you understand how our policies are working, like the prep time that we just recently supplied more of, and hearing from them that we have, that the prep time is not always being allocated the way the board maybe thought it was, that some of that prep time is actually being taken for more collaborative things and other meetings from administrators. So just kind of understanding that maybe not every district or every building is implementing our policies equally the way that we thought they were, and just getting that feedback.
Okay, thank you. And the next to answer this question is Mary Motter.
All right. Well, I have been in the district for over 30 years. I subbed for the first 3 years and traveled to most of the schools as a sub. I spent 10 years at McKinley Middle School. It was junior high when I started. 10 years at Bolin. My husband is at Bradford, so I spent a good deal of time there just helping him out with different things. In 2009 to 2012, I was released from the classroom, and my job with the Kenosha Education Association was such that I had to visit every school every semester. So I made 6 visits to every one of the schools, including the charters. I'm very familiar with the schools. Having been involved with KOSD for so many years, I know many of the players, as the teachers have become principals and then moved up to other administration. You could say that I know and understand the players in the game, and I've formed good relationships with them. Many of my students, and I guess this sort of shows my age, are now parents in the district and have reached out to me on Facebook and in the community and stuff. So many of my students are parents with children in the district. And so I know many parents as well. I think all of that means that I have become a very approachable person, and I think I'm the kind of school board member that people will feel comfortable reaching out to and talking to.
Okay, thank you. The next respondent to this question is Todd Battle.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. I've had a fair amount of exposure to KUSD schools in a lot of different ways. In one instance, Lakeview Technology Academy, it's actually a charter school that operates out of a non-KUSD facility, and actually our education foundation owns that facility. So we've been involved in that charter school since it was started, really as a kind of a founding member of that school and its charter. And continue to be involved in it. I've got 2 daughters that are students at K-Tech. I have a wife that's a teacher at Brompton. I've been a mentor through our CABA Elementary School Mentoring Program, and that's had stints at Wilson Elementary, Bullen Middle School, Mahone Middle School, and various others. And being involved in that mentoring program has just taken me to a lot of those different schools. And then even just as I decided to run for the board, I felt that it was important to visit and learn more about additional schools that I wasn't that familiar with. So I've toured probably another 8 or 10 schools in the last several months to get a feel for them. And in terms of how it will inform my work as a school board member, probably the thing that it, you know, I'm taken aback by is particularly with some of our urban schools, our elementary and middle schools, just some of the extreme challenges there with the student body that's coming into the school building in terms of mental health issues, in terms of poverty issues, in terms of things that are going on outside of the classroom and the impact that has on those schools. So there's some extreme needs, particularly in the core urban area of the city, and I think we have to be mindful of that as a school district. Equal doesn't necessarily mean equity, and I look at some of these schools that have extreme challenges, and I think we have to be creative as a school board and a school system figure out how we can better serve some of those schools that have some extreme issues. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And finally, Tom Duncan.
Thanks, Karen. I'm especially proud of the fact that my wife is a retired speech pathologist from the school system, and both of her parents were school teachers. Joe Brown was a principal, and Phyllis Brown was a teacher as well. But I think equally important are the two kids that we had that went through the school system. Stephen Duncan, who is now an orthopedic surgeon, that certainly gained a lot through the schools, and Aaron Duncan, the master's prepared in education and is teaching English. So really proud of the fact of what our school system has done to help bring these kids along. I've had a chance, as Todd just identified, to visit many of the schools in addition to the schools that I was part of as my wife was in her job. But going through Tremper and Bradford and Lakeview and Washington and McKinley and Grevenel and Bullen and K-Tech and Wilson and Frank, as Todd also identified, I think we need to be really proud of what each and every one of these schools are doing. And irrespective of brick and mortar, it's really about the teachers that are in those schools that are teaching with the highest level of quality that they possibly can, passing that quality education on to our children so that they can excel, that they can grow, that they all can have bright futures. So I think we must be extremely pleased with the progress that's being made. And I couldn't be more prouder as I visited with some of the teachers, the individual over at Washington Middle School that I had a chance to visit in her classroom, Mrs. San Pedro teaching Spanish. That was incredible, the way in which she had the kids involved. They were so enthusiastic. So I think what we need to be thinking about, it's not just the brick and mortar. It's not just about the curriculum. It is about the teachers that are teaching our kids, and not necessarily, as we spoke earlier, to the test, but to everyday experiences about how they can find in their lives for the best student achievement.
Okay. Thank you very much. And the fourth question I have is, we'll start with Mary Motter as the first respondent. KUSD has adopted ALICE training to keep students and teachers safe in their school buildings. Do you agree with this choice? Do you see any advantages or flaws in ALICE training?
The school district introduced the ALICE training about 2015, and as one because I was doing reading intervention at that time, I had already retired, but I was doing reading intervention over at Southport, I was able to participate in the training and went through it early on. So that was quite an experience. Since then, I've done a lot of research into ALICE and found that it was actually developed by a police officer because he was concerned that his wife, who was a teacher, might be in danger. It's not a linear progression. You don't have to follow all of the items in order, but more of a common sense approach to learning how to deal with a crisis situation. And as such, I think it's really a good choice for our district, having gone through the training. If you look at the ALICE website and you contact them, you will find that even though there have been active shooting situations at ALICE schools, there's never been a fatality. And I think that says something that maybe hasn't been out in the news. I would strongly encourage all of our parents and people listening to this to attend one of the ALICE trainings, the information sessions that are going on through the district, and learn more about it, because I think that once you understand, you realize that you're not simply teaching the children to be afraid, but you're teaching the teachers, the staff, how to be proactive. And I think that the information sessions are very eye-opening.
Okay, thank you. And Todd Battle.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. I absolutely agree with the district's adoption of ALICE as a defense mechanism and a deterrent. I think it's sad, and I think it's a sad commentary that we are having to teach this to our students, but I also think it's reality. There have been, you know, a number of school shooting and a number of other kind of safety breaches and incidents that you have to be prepared. So I think KUSD is right to adopt it. I don't think it's, you know, it's a perfect deterrent or a perfect defense mechanism, but I think it's a protocol that when put in place and followed, has a great propensity to increase safety and to deter some of these acts and to minimize the damage from them. I also think KUSD has been a leader in some of the security protocols it takes in terms of one of the first schools in Wisconsin to start locking doors, cameras in many, if not all, of the buildings, and other additional security procedures. I also think KUSD facilities and other people in the administration do a phenomenal job coordinating with local law enforcement. It's very clear as you listen to the leadership of KUSD about school safety, ALICE training, and other protocols. They take school safety very seriously, and they should. And, I'm frankly, as I look at some of the things they're doing, I think KUSD is a leader in some of these procedures and policies that they're putting in place to keep our schools safe.
Okay, thank you. Next is Tom Duncan.
Thanks, Karen. I had an opportunity to attend one of the ALICE sessions at Tremper, and my takeaway was, thank goodness, we are doing the very best that we can to make sure that we have safe schools. No student, no teacher, no one going into our school should be afraid of going to school. So I'm proud that our system has taken this very, very seriously in this leadership role of making sure that ALICE and that it is an ongoing excellent opportunity for the community to participate, and seeking out community participation just continues to educate everybody on the necessity to further develop these safety measures for everyone within our schools. And I think probably one of the things that I learned as a Boy Scout is to be prepared. So as we do this preparation, we're taking away hopefully some of the fears, and the minutes and seconds that so as something might happen, everyone is prepared to make sure that everyone in the school is as safe as they possibly can. And I've advocated that there are several areas that we probably should be working with, and that's the extensive training of school staff with all local police and fire drills, the repetition. I think that takes away some of the instances where we may not know what to do. Locked doors, as we've just spoken about through Todd, make sure that the school office is strategically located, that we have the cameras, that in fact we have sound detection systems to identify shots fired. We must make sure that our schools are as safe as they possibly can be. Background checks on anyone volunteering in our schools. And we must make sure now, as Governor Walker has passed some recent legislation, that we can, in fact, get the respective grants going, find a way to increase the number of resource officers in sufficient numbers so that they are trained to take appropriate action and not have to arm our teachers. Our teachers are to be in the schools to teach, not to have to carry a gun. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Mike Falkowski.
First, I just want to address one point. A background check, the district does do that for all volunteers. Mm-hmm. Before I was on the school board, I was a parent volunteer, and I had to have my background checked to make sure I was safe to be around kids. ALICE training is a big improvement over lockdown. Lockdown, and as you go to the ALICE training, if you had a chance to go to the community discussions on it, one of the first things we learned was lockdown was actually something that was developed in Southern California for external threats, where unfortunately they had a situation where gang members were drive past schools and actually shoot at school buildings. So it was an attempt to keep those kids safe from external threat, never designed to handle internal threats. And actually, as we saw at Sandy Hook, it could be bad because once the shooter gets in the room, all the kids are in one corner. And even though the teacher's trying to protect them, he just shot all the people in that one, all those kids in that one classroom. So, and as Mary mentioned, ALICE is not progressive. It's just a choice. It's a toolbox. So depending on the situation, if the shooters in your hallway, then the first thing you do is you lock your door, and we have barrier kits where you can actually secure the door. If the shooter's at the opposite end of the building, you may choose to actually escape and go out to a rally point. We have all of your training the staff and the students how to go out to rally points. But that is actually a reactive policy. I think the district is starting to now collect information. We're going to work on a security policy, which would be a more proactive approach. One of the things we had with the dress code was we were going to use IDs, and the secondary principals from middle schools and high schools gave us a list of suggestions. One of them was to give them more resources to help them develop a more comprehensive check-in process so that they could keep the schools secure. So being more proactive, making sure that we have a way to stop someone at the front door, check them out before we let them in the school, because we do have locks and we do have a lot of these entrances by the office, and we need to make sure that we're vetting everybody before they come in the school. So I think it's a great first step, but we can definitely take some additional steps to continue to make our schools safer.
Okay, thank you very much. Believe it or not, we are running out of time. So we're actually now at the point where we're going to do our one-minute closing or summary statement. So a reminder to our listeners, this is Education Matters on WGTD. This is a Kenosha Unified School Board candidate forum. The four candidates that are here are Todd Battle, Tom Duncan, Mike Falkowski, and Mary Motter. And you each have 1 minute to make a closing or a summary statement. So we'll start with Todd Battle.
Yeah, I think if I would just say a couple things about why I'm running for school board, I'd just add that a few of those things are Darby Battle and Cameron Battle, my two daughters. They're in the public school systems. My wife and I are strong advocates for the public school system, and we want them to continue their education there. And there's also another 21,000-plus students that rely on our public school systems, often more than they should for a lot of things that hopefully they should be getting at home, but sometimes they're not. And that could be their education. That could sometimes be their meals. That could be positive adult role models, safe environments, encouragement, and mentors. I want to serve on the KUSD board because I feel strongly about our public school system and that they're a critical building block to the strength and health of our community. And I think I'd be a good advocate on the school board for raising the image of our public school system. I think that the KUSD has more, there sometimes has an image issue that doesn't match the quality of the product. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And Tom Duncan.
Thanks, Karen. As I've said previously, my early life in the Boy Scouts taught me that life is all about preparation, and it's been my goal to help others to listen, communicate, set goals, and meet standards so that they are prepared for life and can strive to do their best. As I mentioned earlier, visiting several of the schools convinced me to run. My opportunity, hopefully, as a school board member will allow me to be focused on ensuring that we are providing the necessary resources and training to maximize student achievement. I've said that I want to assure bright futures, and my hope is that by electing Duncan to the board, that I will bring that investment, I will make sure our district is impacting student and community lives, and I hope to be the best listener so that as I'm out in the community seeking that collaboration, that we can, in fact, do a better job, help our teachers to receive the type of pay and benefits they need, and our students the type of achievement, bridging all gaps so that everyone can be successful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Mike Falkowski.
Thank you. I've enjoyed, you know, serving on the last 3 years on the board, and I hope to continue for another 3 years if reelected. I've been hardworking. I've attended all of the executive sessions. I'm always prepared for meetings. I'm in it because I have 3 students in the district, but it's not just for them. I'm also in it for all the students because I have a lot of friends with students in the district, and my kids have friends in the district. And all to support the teachers, I think they're underappreciated. So I'm always a cheerleader when I can be to tell people what a hardworking bunch they are and how much they're doing with so little resources. And really, I love talking to the community, so I will continue to try to bring the community in, push for more and community involvement in our decisions so that we can continue to create a district that serves not just the students but the entire community.
Okay, thank you. And Mary Brown Motter.
We're all agreed that we face some challenges in our schools. We've got extreme challenges in our urban classrooms. Having worked with some of our most challenging students, I understand these issues. I agree that we need high-functioning schools, but I think I have the best background to help us achieve this goal of getting high-functioning schools. Just as we want doctors on medical boards and judges on legal boards, I think we need some teacher voices on the school board, someone who understands how policy relates to practice. And I think I'm the one who can best give us that voice.
Okay, thank you all. This has been the 2018 KUSD School Board Forum. And candidates Todd Battle, Tom Duncan, Mike Falkowski, and Mary Brown Motter have joined us today to share their views on some critical issues for our school district. This program will be archived on our WGTD website under the Education Matters page. You can also continue this discussion on WGTD Education Matters Facebook page. And look there for the link to the archive if you want to listen again. Thank you very much for joining us.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.